everyone. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Well, welcome to the ICANN Policy Update webinar. This is the first of two sessions we're holding today, and one in a series of audio conference calls that the Policy Department holds to brief the community on various issues. The session we're holding today.
Ja, is goed.
The session we're holding today is to update you on the current policy work and invite you to participate in the ongoing work of the ICANN community, and in particular, the work and discussions that will be occurring at the ICANN Seoul meeting. So we'll provide an overview of the key policy issues that are being addressed by the GNSO and CCNSO communities at Seoul, and we'll be answering your questions. A few housekeeping items first. Both the slides, a recording of this call, and a transcript of the presentations will be made available on ICANN's website. We'll be sending links to the GNSO, CCSO, and at-large communities and others, and posting these on our website. As with all international conference calls, if you please to reduce background noise, make sure that you keep your phone on mute. Actually, we've muted all of the phone lines except for the particular presenters. I'd like to remind you to use Adobe Connect to raise questions. We'll be running through the slide presentation and providing an overview of all of the issues, and then we'll be taking questions in a Q&A session. We've scheduled an hour and a half for this call. We hope to accommodate all of your questions, but in the event that we run out of time, we'll make sure that we follow up on email. At the end of our presentation, we'd also like to learn what issues you're interested in hearing more about in the future for our next session. So as I noted, one of the things we want to do is to preview for you the issues in particular that will be discussed at upcoming ICANN Seoul meeting. It's scheduled for October 25th through 30th. Of course, the GNSO community, and I believe the at-large community as well, begins working the weekend before, and I think the CCNSO's meetings have also started creeping in earlier. So we have quite a challenging schedule ahead of us next week. There's a whole range, of course, of activities that will be occurring in Seoul. The highlights and a strong focus for many in the community will be new GTLDs and IDN CCTLD fast track issues, as well as discussions of the affirmation of commitment document that was recently signed between ICANN and the U.S. government. The affirmation of commitment document includes a number of community-led reviews. So there's some new responsibilities for members of the community, and we'll be discussing in Seoul, starting the discussion in Seoul about how to actually implement those reviews and the roles of the community and how that will go forward. On new GTLDs, of course, the draft applicant guidebook has been posted. There'll be a whole series of workshops that focus on that document and the community's effort to come to closure on the process for introducing new GTLDs. That will include workshops on vertical separation, mitigating malicious conduct, trademark protections, and root zone scaling. And finally, as I noted, IDN CCTLD fast track will be the other strong focus of the ICANN Seoul meeting, with overview workshops and discussions of the proposed implementation plan that also has been posted on the web. We're expecting the board to make a final decision on that implementation plan in Seoul. So the topics that we'll be covering in today's session include, as I just noted, highlights of some of the issues that we're dealing with in Seoul. Then we'll be Rob Hogarth will be giving you a brief overview of the GNSO restructuring and improvement activities. Marika Toning will address the issues of inter-registrar transfer policy, post-expiration domain name recovery, and registration abuse. Liz Gasser will bring you up to date on who is, in particular the who is studies that the GNSO is working on. Margie Bylum will provide you with an update on the RAA amendments and related activities and those that will occur in Seoul, as well as the new GTLD implementation and what the board has recently passed the GNSO with providing input on two key implementation issues. And Margie will address that as well as some related issues that the GNSO is dealing with. And finally, Bart Boswinkel will be giving you an update on the policy development process on IDN that is occurring in the PCNSO, as well as provide you with some more information on the IDN fast track activities. The slides show you the policy staff and their location. A number of slides will be have been included in this slide deck, more than we have time to address in depth, but they're included to provide you with reference and additional information. And as I noted, the slide deck will be posted online for everyone's use later. For those not familiar with ICANN and its policy structure, the policy at ICANN is developed by the generic name supporting organization, the country code name supporting organization, and the address supporting organization. These groups develop policy in their respective areas with a lot of advice and support from key communities, such as the at-large community and the at-large advisory committee, the security and stability advisory committee, the root server systems advisory committee, and of course, finally, the governmental advisory committee. And we'll be moving into first the GNSO area and discussing their issues and then moving on to the CCNSO before taking your questions. The issues that are being discussed at the GNSO include GNSO restructuring and improvements, as I noted, the register transfer policy, post-expiration, domain name recovery, registration abuse policies, who is, possible changes to the registrar accreditation agreement, and other issues. The other issues include 13 working groups and work teams dealing with a whole variety of issues, including a number of elements of the GNSO improvements and restructuring. The GNSO has a very full plate, I should say. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Rob Hogarth, who will take you through the latest activities in GNSO improvements. Rob?
Thank you, Denise. Welcome, everyone. Good day to those of you in various parts of the globe. As you all know, the GNSO is an important structure within the ICANN community, and that it develops the policies related to GTLDs. And it's a very diverse community. We currently have six constituencies and a council responsible for policy development of 21 representatives. And it was very important, and as many of you know, it's very important as part of ICANN's DNA to conduct regular reviews of the various supporting organizations and advisory committees to ensure that the processes and policies are going well and that we're maximizing opportunities for the community. So the GNSO improvements process has been underway for some time now. The primary areas for change in the GNSO that came out of the independent reviews conducted, input from the community, are essentially in five main areas. The primary areas are with respect to policy development. And so the general parameters that the board approved at its Paris meeting last year in June were the need to adopt a working group model for policy development to ensure that policy development in the GNSO is more inclusive, representative and effective, to revise the policy development process overall to make it more effective and responsive to the community's needs, to restructure the GNSO Council, to work on enhancing the constituencies and their services to the community and their members by making them more transparent, accountable, and accessible. And finally, overall, to improve communication not only within the GNSO, but with other structures within the community to ensure that the GNSO is in a position to work well with the other structures. What I wanted to do real briefly was borrow from a Winston Churchill quote, because as you notice, we've got a number of areas that we're working on right now in terms of the GNSO improvements. And I think Churchill said something along the lines of, we're not at the end, we're not even at the beginning of the end, but it appears perhaps that we're at the end of the beginning of this process, particularly with respect to implementation. One of the primary benchmarks that the GNSO community is going to achieve is to seat the newly structured GNSO Council in Seoul in a couple of weeks. And the slide you see in front of you shows the general structure of the new council. It'll increase its membership by one member, as you note there, from 21 members up to 22. And there's a new structure that includes this concept of bicameral voting and a contract party house and a non-contract party house. This is not a presentation for getting into the details of this, but this slide generally shows that the tremendous amount of complexity and the tremendous amount of work that the GNSO Council, the various new stakeholder groups, and the constituencies themselves have had to engage in over the last couple of months. So we're going to reach an important milestone in Seoul with the seating of the new council, the election of the council's leadership, and the approval of some updated council operating procedures. Now, in terms of next steps and what's going to be happening both in Seoul and post-Seoul is that with the new stakeholder group charters in place, the new bylaws in place, many members of the community, particularly the council, are really going to be working to understand and really see how a lot of these new mechanisms work. A number of you know that two of the stakeholder group charters are really transitional charters, and the board has decided that over the next year, they'll be really working with the commercial stakeholder group community and the non-commercial stakeholder group community to develop more stable and permanent charter structures for those communities. When the new council meets in a couple of weeks, there will be 8 new representatives, so that through its transition implementation plan, the council has been able to assure some stability moving forward, to assure that we maintain consistency, but introduce a lot of new blood. And so we'll see many new members and many new faces when we convene in Seoul. Right now, the nominations have closed for council leadership. There are 3 nominees for the position of GNSO Council Chair, and the elections for that position will take place in Seoul. As I noted, there are new council procedures. There's currently a public comment forum that is open for another couple of days for the community to comment on recommendations made by the Operating Steering Committee and its GNSO Council Operations Work Team that have updated a number of the procedures that the council uses for voting, for leadership selection, and for various discussions. And those are posted on the ICANN Public Comments webpage. And then finally, post-Seoul, there's going to be a lot of additional work that's really needed to be done, particularly on the policy development side. There are 2 very robust work teams responsible for developing the new policy development process and developing the new working group model that ensures a lot more community participation in the process. And those groups still have a lot of work underway to develop those processes. On the final slide, I want to get in a really important pitch to note that with all this additional work that's necessary, that we do have these work teams, we do have the committee work, and those of you who are members of the GNSO community should certainly reach out to your constituency leaders and others, to Glenn and the Secretariat to express your interest and volunteer your time, because we can certainly use more brain power and more perspective on a lot of these things. And we also encourage you all to check out the GNSO ICANN improvements information page. We're going to be updating a lot of that information as we go into Seoul, and that provides a lot of really good background materials for you all to give you a better perspective of the process and the review as a whole. And I'll close on that and just hang around and be happy to answer questions when we get to the end of the session. Thank you very much.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'll be covering the following three issues on the agenda, the first two of which are policy development processes, which we also like to call PDPs, and the third one being a pre-PDP. I'll explain in further detail what that means in a couple of slides. So first, looking at the inter-registrar transfer policy, which is also called IRTP. This consensus policy was adopted in 2004 in an effort to provide registrants with a transparent and predictable way in which domain names can be transferred between registrars. As this was a new policy, it was decided to conduct a review shortly following the implementation of the policy to determine whether the policy was working as it was intended and whether there were any issues that might require further clarification or improvement. As a result of this review, a number of issues were identified that were then grouped together in five different PDPs listed from A, B, C through to E, which are currently being addressed in a consecutive manner. A working group is currently looking at the issues grouped together in PDP, which relate to questions such as, is there a need for a process for the urgent return of a domain name, and how to undo inappropriate transfers, and the use of registrar lock status. So as you can see, the working group has started only recently and will be organizing a public meeting in Seoul, which will be open for everyone interested to attend. The working group isn't expected to develop recommendations to address the issues mentioned just before for the council to consider. If you're interested in participating, you know, please contact the GNSO secretariat or attend the open meeting in Seoul, which will take place Monday morning very early. On this slide, you can find some further background information and links for those of you that are interested to learn more about the inter-registrar transfer policy and the activities of the working group. And as said, these slides will be made available after the presentation, so you can click on the links and learn more. So a second policy development process that is currently ongoing is on post-expiration domain name recovery. This is an issue that was brought to the GNSO by the At-Large Advisory Committee that raised a number of questions in relation to the predictability and transparency of existing expiration and renewal policies and practices. It also raises questions like, what rights do registrants still have once their domain name registration has expired? And as a result of that, the GNSO initiated a policy development process, and a working group was created to address the following questions. So as you can see, most of these questions will require the working group to gather further information on existing practices, as well as evidence and to what, you know, harm is caused by certain of these issues. Are they big problems? Do they warrant policy changes or policy development? In addition to making an assessment of what can be considered as adequate and clear and conspicuous. So in order to address these charter questions, the working group has been meeting on a weekly basis and is currently conducting a registrar survey with the aim of gathering further information on registrar practices post-expiration to inform the deliberations of the working group. This working group will also be organizing a meeting in Seoul at which they expect to provide a status update on the deliberations so far and present the first results of the survey. And in addition, this will, of course, be an opportunity for the community to provide input and feedback on the questions that this group is looking at. Again, here you'll find some further information on how to get involved, as well as a link to the working group workspace, which is also referred to as a wiki. So this initiative, Registration Abuse Policies, is not a policy development process, but we're referring to it as a pre-policy development process. as it was determined that further research and discussion was required before taking a decision on whether or not to initiate a policy development process on this issue. It was brought to the attention of the Council that current registry and registrar agreements seem to lack uniformity in relation to provisions addressing abuse. But the question was also raised whether this matter, or would more uniformity result in an actual reduction of abuse. In addition, the question was raised of what the role of ICANN should be in this area. ICANN's mission is focused on the DNS. While abuse can take many different shapes and forms and can cross over many different areas of the Internet apart from the DNS. As a result, a pre-PDP working group was created to look at these and other questions in order to make recommendations to the GNSO Council which areas, if any, would be suitable for policy development. So this working group was created in March and has been working on developing a working definition of abuse. They've created a list of known abuses and have subdivided those in pre-registration abuse, registration abuse, post-registration abuse, and domain name use abuse, and trying to provide definitions and discussing potential recommendations for next steps on each of these abuses. A sub-team was created to address a number of questions in relation to desirability or not of uniformity of registration abuse provisions in agreements. And this group will also be having a public meeting in Seoul, which will be an opportunity for the community to provide input and feedback to the working group. And here again, you'll find some further information on the activities of the working group and some background documents that have occurred before the working group was founded. So with that, I'll turn it over to Liz Gaster to discuss who is.
Good day, everyone. Liz Gaster here, and thank you. I'm going to be giving a brief status report on who is studies that have been requested by the GNSO Council. Before I do, I'm going to just briefly take a moment to define who is. WHOIS is a service that provides public access to contact information for registered name holders. The requirements for providing WHOIS are specified in ICANN agreements with registrars and registries, and there is required data that is specified in those contracts that must be provided that I've listed there on the screen. The next slide shows you a sample of what a WHOIS record looks like. WHOIS records can look a little different depending on the provider who's displaying the data. This particular sample WHOIS record is ICANN's registration, just to illustrate how the information that is typically displayed in WHOIS looks and the kind of information that is included. WHOIS has been an issue. The public access to WHOIS contact information has been debated by the ICANN community for many years. There are many competing interests with many valid viewpoints that I've attempted to summarize here. Generally, law enforcement entities, intellectual property owners, others who might be, for example, the cybersecurity community would like to have easy access to as accurate contact information as in WHOIS as possible in order to quickly track down registrants where there might be problems with some of the activity and related to the domain name, et cetera. Many individuals and many privacy advocates are concerned about privacy protection and the public access to personal information and potential abuse of that information if it's public. Governments are concerned about WHOIS because they want to make sure that their legal regimes are followed, and government countries around the world do have different legal regimes when it comes to what should be public and what should be private, especially with regard to information involving individuals. And there are also implications for service providers, registrars and registries, who might be reluctant to absorb new costs associated with new features or requirements. And they're also very mindful that there can be financial benefits to offering privacy services and such that are important to their business model. So the issue of WHOIS is quite important, and historically, although several policy proposals have been put forward, none have been endorsed as consensus policies, really because of these competing interests and controversy associated with, you know, what is the right answer if there is such a concept in terms of changing who is policy. So in 2008, the GNSO Council formed a working group to really study and invited proposals on who is studies with the hopes that carefully amassed study data could provide an objective, factual basis for further policy making and provide information that would be useful and insightful for policy making. So the council selected a variety of topics that reflect key policy areas of concern, study proposals to provide information such as possible causality in increasing spam and other harmful acts, trying to get information about registrants, the use of proxy and privacy services, and some of the challenges that they may present, and also looking at technical consideration of alternatives, the kinds of service requirements, both the current and potential in the future, that might be called for, especially in light of the growing number of international registrations. So those are really the goals that the council had in mind in investigating who is studies. So in doing so, the council identified several broad areas, and essentially we've categorized them as staff into about five broad areas. And I'm going to just quickly hit on what those five areas are during the rest of this presentation and what the current status is of these. And in Seoul, I'll be providing a more extensive overview of the details of each of these study areas and some of the ways in which we're considering approaching them. But again, the council asked staff to find out what the cost and feasibility for doing these studies are, and we decided that for the first three sets of studies, it would be wise to solicit proposals that included cost and feasibility from knowledgeable independent researchers rather than trying to come up with those costs ourselves. So the first area looks at misuse of public data and how it might be abused to generate spam or other illegal or undesirable activities. We have already released an RFP. It was posted on the 27th of September, and responses from researchers are due on the 27th of November. It's quite a detailed terms of reference for two studies in this category. So I encourage you to take a look at that if you're interested in the details. Secondly, we will be generating an RFP for a study that we're calling Registrant Identification Study. We were previously referring to this study as a misrepresentation study. We think identification study is actually a more accurate term for this study because we're going to be examining who registrants are. Are they legal persons? Are they natural persons? Are they using proxy services? Are they using privacy services? There will also be a component of this study that looks at misrepresentation, potential misrepresentation by registrants. But that is only one component of a broader identification study. And again, expect to see an RFP on that by the end of this month. And then we will also be taking a look at issuing an RFP, request for proposals, to determine cost and feasibility, to look at several more detailed aspects of proxy and privacy services. And we're hoping to have that RFP released by the end of the year. So these are the first three broad areas of study. All three, we're looking at RFPs to approach determining the costs. And on this next slide, there are two more studies that I'm providing information on. For those, we are not going the route of an RFP, at least for now. The fourth study area would examine how various WHOIS services display non-ASCII local character sets. This study is on hold at the moment because a new FSAC GNSO working group is being convened that will be considering display specifications for internationalized registration data, and it's our sense that that work may supersede the need for this fourth study, or this fourth study may be subsumed by that work. So we are holding off until that group forms to have that group consider where this fourth study should fit in to that overall examination. And then the fifth study area is a request from the GNSO Council that came a little later. The first group, these first four, were requested back in March of this year, and this request was made of staff in May of this year. And the request was to compile a set of service requirements for WHO is based on current requirements and potential policy ideas or proposals that have been discussed in the past. So staff will be reviewing and compiling both the current WHO is requirements, but also detailing proposals that have been made in the past. And as requested by the council, we'll also be putting a straw man proposal together for a consultation with all of the other supporting organizations and advisory committees that also may have an interest in this. So that's a quick study, a survey of what the studies are going to do and what the status report is. I have made some suggestions about how you might learn more and stay involved. One is to attend the Internationalized Registration Data Workshop in Seoul on Wednesday, the 28th of October, that is going to dig deeper into this issue that was first identified by the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, having to do with the implications of internationalized registration data. There will certainly be an opportunity to contribute to the ESSAC GNSO IRD working group that's just being convened, and they have not yet met. We are encouraging participation now, from especially from technically knowledgeable but interested folks with perspectives on that issue. Staff will be releasing study information on these first three study areas as the analyses are complete, but realistically it's going to take several months for that work to be complete, and that's also true with the compilation that we're going to be doing, but we will be keeping the community informed as we progress on that. And then the GNSO Council, once we have information from researchers on cost and feasibility, the GNSO Council and staff will then consider which studies to conduct. So I do provide some additional information and resources for your reference, and again, just want to note that there'll be a lengthy conversation on WHO is scheduled for the Saturday in Seoul before the meeting officially starts the 24th, and then there'll also be some discussion of WHO is studies at the open meeting the following Wednesday. And I'll be happy to answer questions at the end. And at this point, I will turn it over to Margie Milam to talk about the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. And hello, everybody. I'm going to give you a little bit of background related to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. As many of you know, the Registrar Accreditation Agreement is the agreement that ICANN signed with registrars, and it contains the obligations and rights that registrars have. Recently in May, the ICANN board approved changes to the RAA, and these were the first in a series of changes that will be occurring over time. The changes in May related to issues such as new enforcement tools. There are audit provisions, group liability for affiliated entities, changes to registrar fees. There's also some additional registrar protections that are contained in the recent RAA amendments. These deal with notice related to escrow for proxy services or privacy registrations. And there's also new contractual obligations related to resellers. The amendments also include enhancements to the registrar marketplace and talk about mandatory registrar training and testing. So there's a lot of good provisions in there to help registrars become better at what they do and understand some of the requirements that I can requires of them. There's also additional changes related to notice obligations and data retention requirements. With respect to implementation, it will occur over time. What is happening now is that the registrars are voluntarily signing up to the new terms, and the new terms will be applicable when the agreements are renewed. And as recently as October 1st, we were happy to report that 86% of domain names under management by registrars have committed to the new RAA. So there's a significant number of domain names now covered by the new terms of the RAA. What's happening now is as the GNSO Council and the ICANN Board approved the new amendments that I just discussed, they've also created a joint GNSO and at-large drafting team to work on a couple additional topics related to the registrar accreditation agreement. One of them includes a development of a registrant rights and responsibilities charter that talks about the rights and responsibilities that are that affect registrants and registered rights holders. And the drafting team that has been put together is trying to develop this charter so that registrants can understand the rights that are contained in the registrar accreditation agreement. The working group is just getting started, and the policy staff has prepared an initial inventory of the registrant rights and responsibilities, and the drafting team will take that document and prepare something that can be useful to registrants so they understand the rights and responsibilities that are under the registrar accreditation agreement. The drafting team is also going to identify topics and the process for identifying further amendments to the RAA. Part of the board approval back earlier this year was a mandate to look at additional amendments to the registrar accreditation agreement. And the ICANN compliance office will be providing input for consideration for the working team. So that's something that will be coming soon. So the RAA, why is this important? This is important essentially because it describes the registrar rights and obligations, and it is rarely updated. It hasn't been updated for quite some years before the recent amendments. And the idea is with an enhanced RAA, ICANN will be able to have better tools to obtain registrar compliance. And we are seeking volunteers to help participate in this joint effort, and I've provided a link to additional information. I next want to talk about the new GTLE policy work that is going on, that is currently being undertaken by the GNSO. Currently, there's been a lot of activity, as Denise described, with respect to the draft applicant guidebook. The draft applicant guidebook version 3 was recently posted and includes a number of proposals that deal specifically with intellectual property issues. As many of you may know, a group of intellectual property experts were convened. This group was referred to as the IRT, the Implementation Recommendation Team, and they came up with a series of recommendations, some of which have been incorporated in version 3 of the draft applicant guidebook. Specifically, there's a requirement in that is proposed in the draft applicant guidebook for thick whois registries. There's also a modified post-dispute delegation mechanism that deals with disputes with a registry after the after it has gone into effect. The IRT also made a proposal with respect to a globally protected marks list, and that is not included in draft applicant guidebook version 3. Recently, the ICANN board has made a specific request to the GNSO Council for input on very specific proposals that were made by the IRT, and they relate to certain additional protections to protect against intellectual property abuse. One of them is a uniform rapid suspension procedure that is designed to contain a rapid takedown in the event that there is trademark abuse in new GTLDs. Another one is a trademark clearinghouse concept, where there would be a centralized database of trademark information that could be used for Sunrise registration processes and also for a trademark claim service, like an IP claim service. And these are new concepts that haven't been used in the past. And as a result, the ICANN board has made a formal request to the GNSO to consider these topics and specifically to look at these solutions, the Uniform Rapid Suspension Procedure and the Trademark Clearinghouse, to see whether they're consistent with a prior GNSO Council policy that the that had been adopted previously, and this goes back to I believe 2008 when the GNSO Council made recommendations related to the launch of new GTLDs. They made a recommendation that new GTLD strings should not infringe the right of others, and the intent of this additional work is for the GNSO Council to take a look at these issues to see if adoption of the Uniform Rapid Suspension Procedure or the Trademark Clearinghouse are consistent with the prior GNSO policy. The GNSO is also possibly looking at other issues related to new GTLDs, and specifically the issue that is being discussed is vertical integration of registries and registrars and whether there should be rules related to whether there would be restrictions of ownership between registries and registrars. And the question is, should the GNSO adopt rules addressing this topic that would provide staff guidance in implementation of the new GTLD program? And this is in a very early stage of policy. At the moment, the GNSO Council has requested that ICANN staff prepare an issues report to determine whether there should be a policy development process on this topic. So why is this important? There's several very key issues with respect to new GTLDs. One of them is obviously the trademark concerns and the concern that the cost and administrative burden related to protecting trademarks in new GTLDs could be high. Another one is the potential increase in cyber squatting and consumer confusion. And the scalability of existing processes, specifically the UDRP, in a larger domain name space. And so so these issues of trademark protection are very key. With respect to vertical integration, because we're in the process of launching new GTLDs, it may be appropriate to evaluate what's the appropriate model for domain name distribution and whether there are any competition concerns or benefits that really suggest the need for additional policy work on registrar and registry separation. And because ICANN is in the process of finalizing the draft applicant guidebook, this is really the time to get involved and to voice your concerns. And so I've provided a link on the comment period that's currently open with respect to the draft applicant guidebook, and now is the time to really voice your concern with respect to these issues. And now I'm going to pass it over to Bart. Thank you.
Good afternoon and good day to everybody. I hope you can hear me. I will just provide, say, an overview of the major activities regarding policy work. Some of you may be aware, some of you may not be aware, that besides policy work, the CCNSO activities also include information sharing, exchange of information among CCTLDs, and exchange of information with other supporting organizations and advisory committees. And if you look at the CCNSO meeting days at an ICANN meeting, I would say most time is spent on these other activities on information sharing and exchange of experiences. But as an example, I've included some of the working groups. A second thing what might be useful to take into account is that the CCNSO activities are mostly organized through working groups and not with the goal of developing a policy, but to structure more or less the activities like, for instance, the information sharing. And again, one of the working groups which I have included in this overview is a very good example of it. So going on to the real policy work, I would say, the which is very clearly is the IDN PDP currently running, is if you look at it, say, why is the PDP launched? It is, first of all, to develop an overall policy for the introduction and delegation of IDN CCTLDs. As Denise pointed out when we started this session, the IDN fast track, the intention is that the board will take a decision on the implementation plan, but this is only a temporary mechanism to select and delegate IDN CCTLDs, knowing that the overall policy, when it was launched, would take between 2 and 7 years before it would be, have been implemented. So that is the relation between the PDP and the fast track as well. Now, if you look at the PDP itself, as I said, well, there are, in fact, two objectives. One is to develop an overall policy for the introduction and delegation of IDN CCTLDs, which this is more or less similar to the fast track. And the second one, and that is not part of the fast track, is the CCTL or the CCNSO needs to develop and needs to change its bylaws and its structure to include IDN CCTLDs within the CCNSO. Currently, the mechanisms when they were designed on the assumption that there will be one CCTLD per territory. With the introduction of IDN CCTLDs, you may end up with maybe two or more CCTLDs per territories, and that needs to be accommodated. In order to do so, the CCPDP has two working groups. One will be producing a topic paper pretty very soon, and that is the starting point. The topic paper is on the overall policy, and the purpose of that topic paper is to delineate and define the overall scope of the policy itself. It is planned that the topic paper will be published either tomorrow or Monday, depending on the last feedback we get from the working group members. This working group, so you know, is one of the cross-SOAC's working group. There are representatives on the working group from the ALAC, the GAC, the ESSEC, and the GNSO, and of course the CCTLD and CCTLDs, and it's more or less developing conducting activities in the same manner as the IDNC working group, the working group that developed the recommendations for the fast track. So going to the next slide, how do I get involved in this in the PDP at this time is, first of all, provide public comments on the topic paper, and you could attend the CCNSO meeting on Wednesday morning where the topic paper will be part of the discussion. At the request of ALAC, the public comment period will be at least 35 days long, so we envision that you have the time to comment until at least the 23rd of November. Going to the fast track, the SOAC meeting, the fast track, as Denise already said, is one of the major topics to be discussed by the community. From a CCNSO perspective, it will be addressed on Wednesday. And if you look at the, say, last version of the implementation plan, what you will see is a there is a list of would say, contentious topics, and there is a list of more or less operational topics. With regard to the list of operational topics, and I mean, say, the technical panel assistance to applicants regarding the linguistic expertise, that has been updated and includes now direct references to the UNGEGN. It is one of those UN entities with experts on geographic names. And the other one on the technical panel, there is a, the process is now clarified and more detailed, so applicants know what to expect. With regard to the more contentious issues over the last, over the previous versions of the implementation plan, with regard to the arrangement between the IDN, CCTLD, and the and ICANN, it will be proposed to the board to accept, say, a general terms and conditions form for all CC all requesters. So the applicant or requester needs to fill this in before they can apply for an IDN CCTLDs, and it will contain, say, a statement that the requester or the applicant will abide to the IDN, to the relevant standards and protocols, and to the IDN guidelines, and will engage in a cooperative engagement, as it's called, with ICANN in case there is an issue regarding stability and security. And secondly, with regard to the legal arrangement, there will be something, there is the voluntary possibility to enter either into an exchange of letters, the documentation of responsibilities, or into an agreement, depending on the needs of the depending on the needs of the IDN CCTLD manager. With regard to fees or financial contributions, there is still the application fee and the annual financial contribution. The application fee has been reviewed and will remain at the same level. As to, say, in the previous version, the description of how this would be effectuated or affected was prearranged and recommended, and there is now, I would say, clearer language in the implementation plan. It is expected but not mandatory, and the same is true with regard to the annual financial contribution. Again, the mechanism to say as a percentage of revenue is the same, but the language is it is expected but not mandatory. Say the third one of the issues that were under discussion is the variant and IDN tables. There is now a whole new section in the implementation plan with again another approach to the variant and IDN table. So if you want to participate in discussion, that would be very welcome. The next step is I would say the discussions on the final or on the proposed final implementation plan in Seoul from a CEC perspective. That will be on Wednesday morning at the CCNSO meeting. But during the week, and especially on Monday, there are some cross-constituency, cross-community sessions going on as well. going on to the next bit. As I said, the CCNSO is also using working groups to structure its activities. Now, one of the major ones is the redelegation retirement of CCTLD's working group. This one was established in order to advise the CCNSO whether or not to launch a PDP. So that is a new one. What is interesting is this one is going at the heart of the CCNSO and why it was created. And the currently the working group is defining its working plan. Move forward. So, and there is some discussion going on within the working group. Hopefully we can get the work plan published prior to Seoul, but the working group is of the opinion it needs to have its working plan together before it can go into substantive work. What is relevant with regard to this working group as well, there is the board resolution on the retirement of the .yu CCTLD. At the request of the .yu, the board is asking the CCNSO to advise the board on the retirement in future of CCTLDs. Going on to other working groups, again, as I said at the beginning of this session on the CCNSO, working groups are the mechanism through which the CCNSO and the CCTLD community organizes their activities. There are currently, on the top of my head, 8 working groups on very different topics. The major working groups are currently the technical working group. This is, again, focused on, I would say, 2 main topics. One is the exchange of operational information and experience among CCTLDs, and secondly, it will liaise with IANA on the issues CCs will have regarding the IANA services for the CCTLDs, not so much delegation, redelegation, and retirement, but name server changes, e-IANA, and the operational activities of IANA. A second working group which might be of interest for this audience is the Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group. This is, again, a standing working group, as we call it. It was created to facilitate and organize the input of the CCTLD community into ICANN's strategic and operational planning processes. Until recently, the CCTLDs, with the exception of a few, were not so much participating in ICANN's strategic and planning processes, but with the with IDN CCTLDs and other ICANN activities on particularly relating to security and stability and DNSSEC, of course, the CCTLDs recognize the need for a higher level of participation into the strategic and operational planning processes of ICANN. And the third one, again, and I've included this one as a good example of how the CCNSO organizes its activity. It's called the Incident Response Planning Working Group. This is in the aftermath of the Configure incident. Everybody was aware there was a need to improve the channels of communication among the CCTLDs and among the CCTLD community in ICANN and the broader security community in order to respond timely to incidents affecting the DNS. This working group will produce a work plan over the next day or two and for discussion in the CC, NSO, and CC, NSO meetings and with the CCTLD community. And if you're more interested in the other working groups, I'll refer to the slides. Liz, it's up to you. I think I've got too much buttons.
Thank you so much, Bart. Two things now. First of all, we mentioned at the beginning that all of your lines were on mute. That was to just keep the background noise to a minimum, but we have unmuted all the participants' lines at this point. We'd like to do a couple different things. First, we did have one quick question that I wanted to address, which was Bart had mentioned that there were 8 working groups, and earlier on in talking about the GNSO, we mentioned that there were 13 working groups. So Bart's comments were specifically related to the CCNSO. The earlier comment about 13 was the GNSO. So we actually have more than 21 working groups overall, with the 13 in the GNSO listed on the GNSO page. And I'll ask Bart to comment on if there is a list of the 8 working groups for the CCNSO.
This is Bart. Just check. You can see it, and it's included in the slides, a reference to the page on the CCNSO website. I have 8 working groups from the CCNSO, and we have 4 more working groups as well. And they're all listed.
Thank you. So the next thing is we are very eager to hear what issues you would like to hear more about in future webinars. And we provided a little poll for you, and you can just simply, if you're in Adobe Connect, tick off the topics that you'd like to hear more about right now, and we'll make a record of that to make sure that these policy briefings are of interest and targeted to your particular areas. So please participate in the poll, and then after this, we'll have a chance to have some Q&A for the remaining few minutes of the call. And do keep in mind that all the phone lines now are unmuted, so if there is background noise in your area, feel free to unmute yourself. And by the way, you're encouraged to also send suggestions to the policy staff. There may be additional issues you're concerned about that aren't on this poll or any other ideas that you have. So we welcome your email suggestions as well to the email suggested on the Adobe policy-staff@ICANN.org. I will just take another minute to collect your views. Looks like people are still weighing in, so thank you for that. We have a question that suggests that we're not asking about GAC activities, so that would be an additional suggestion that we'll make a note of. And if others think that it's important to hear about GAC activities, maybe we'll ask you to send that email to us too, since it won't be a part of this poll. We don't want to lose a sense of the importance of that. Okay. Well, feel free to continue to update the poll for another minute, and then I'm happy to take questions and direct them to the appropriate person. I see also a request that there be further discussion of not only GAC activities but board activities. So I'd like to make a note of that. And again, everyone's, you may certainly type a question in, but since everyone is unmuted, you should feel free to jump in and ask a question. And if a lot of people want to ask questions, I'll just take a cue. Are there any questions at this time?
Yes, Liz?
Yes.
Hi. I'm just, I don't want to overload you guys, so I'm just putting in a question. I think the webinar was very helpful, and I do want to thank you guys for organizing it. I know it's challenging to give the appetizer course to very, very complex topics, and my compliments to all of you for managing to do that. I have both good news and bad news. Now that I've had the appetizer course, I want more information. I'm wondering, clearly the use of remote participation tools is really significantly increasing at ICANN. And I want to say thanks to all of you for your participation in making that happen as well. I'm wondering, though, maybe if there's a plan to, what is the plan for how the briefing materials that take place in the webinars and the questions get captured and then are available after the fact for people who don't make a particular webinar? So that's my first question. And then my second related question is, will these webinars potentially be organized on a recurring basis, or do you as staff foresee using them initially as preparatory events around the particular face-to-face meetings to help to build interest and awareness in them?
This is Liz. I'm going to try to answer those, and if I lose any of those questions, come back to it. First, this webinar and all of these policy overview webinars will be recorded. The presentation itself, the slides will be posted, the MP3 will be posted, and a transcript will be posted. They are separate, and one thing we're looking into is how we could post them in an integrated way so that you could review them in an integrated way. There are some complexities to that technically that we're aware of and working through. So evolving process, but the content will be available for all of these. Second question, we want to do a number of things through this remote participation. One is definitely to prep the community in advance of the meetings on a regular basis, so that would be a matter be routinized in the future and be publicized accordingly for the purpose of bringing the community up to speed, both those who intend to attend those public meetings and for those who may not be able to attend the meetings, to have a sense of what the focus is going to be and allow people to selectively participate in those sessions remotely, hopefully based on what we provide today. But we are also planning to use this mechanism for more kinds of outreach that aren't just policy updates like this, but one example would be for maybe the less initiated in ICANN, where the content would be more baseline in terms of what the structure, how the structures of ICANN work and how people can participate and be more educational in that sense. And we may, you may have participated or heard about a recent webinar that one of my colleagues in the policy group, Dave Piscatello, did on the internationalized registration data work that the Security and Stability Advisory Committee has been doing. That's a special topic webinar using this remote participation that we're also planning to make use of. So I think the answer to all your questions is yes, but in an evolving way. And to the degree that all of you in the community have ideas about how we could make this process more effective, how beneficial sort of more remedial outreach session might be, or possible specific topics for webinars in the future, we're very eager to do that. And none of this precludes the possibility that we also might like to do some face-to-face briefings on policy issues around the world, where we can in subsequent years. So we're still recognizing and exploring that mechanism for outreach and participation as well. And it's very important for us to retain the input that we get through these mechanisms, the questions that you're asking, the suggestions on the poll, which you'll see it looked like it's ultimately there was a tie between GNSO improvement and what was the second thing? It's off my screen.
CCLTs,
thank you. lots of opportunity there. And I just, let me see if there are more questions.
I have
yes, question. There is more question. If you use your tool, it's Sébastien Bachelet. If you use your tool, you will see that I am requesting for the floor.
Sébastien, you have the floor. My problem is I was talking and looking at the same time, so my apologies.
Oh, that's okay. I think first I would like to say that I guess that the previous question came from Marlene Cade, and that's important because as it is recorded, the people who will come on and who don't know the voice of Marlene will not know that it was Marlene's question. I have a few points. I guess that we need to really separate what it's a call where we want to discuss the topics and the calls where we are brief about the topic. That means that today it was very interesting to have this overview, but in each and any topic, some of us would like to discuss some of those issues, and that's must be separated, because if we handle to start the discussion on each topic now, we are up to the end of the ICANN meeting, and even more if we want to do that. My second point is that I would like to suggest that there are different groups using these tools of public participation. The Public Participation Board Working Group, ALAC, webinar from people from ESSAC, ERSAC, and you are doing today. I think we need to have one meeting to have a feedback on those tools, how we use it, what are the good experiences, and why, how we can improve it. For example, today, as it was during the last webinar on, organized by GNSO, it seems that we are not able to see the question asked by the others on the chat. And I think that's very disturbing. Why we can't discuss among us during this chat too. And my third point is that I guess as it's a really worldwide webinar, we need to try to find a way to have that in other language. ALAC is doing with translation, with interpretation, sorry. But maybe as a population it's more important we can handle in some language to give this as an information in other languages. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for those suggestions, and all worthy of consideration as we perfect this process. YJ Park has a question.
Hi. Well, also thank you for providing this webinar, and this seems to be very helpful. And I have a question about this IGN CCTLD launch. So probably Bart can answer some of my questions, because during the Bart's presentation, it says non-contentious IDN CCTLDs will be launched, and I will be interested to know how many non-contentious IDN CCTLDs are considered right now. And also, as far as I understand, the launch will be done sometime November 16th. And so I'm not really so sure about what that means for November 16th, whether that means IDN CCTLD will be joining this root zone files, or how that kind of start the processes. That will be my first question. And the second question is, also Bart mentioned this, there could be possibility to have agreement or exchange of letters. So I will be interested to know whether that is the decision of the CCTLD managers, or what kind of situations. So that means it will be similar to this the current CCTLD framework. And also in line with that, the CCTLD framework, I will be interested to know how this financial, the contribution discussion will be formulated. So if Bart can answer those questions, that will be great.
Let me start with the first one. I think that is the easiest one on the dates and et cetera. As far as I know, and this is what is in the implementation plan as well, the implementation plan is a proposed final implementation plan that will be put forward to the board for board adoption and vote. If it's adopted, and this is suggested in the implementation plan, the door will be open for IDN CCTLDs for requesting and submitting a IDN CCTLD string. Now, one of the things that you need to keep in mind constantly when we talk about the IDN Fast Track, it is in fact a two-step process. The first step is the validation of, that's maybe too strong a word, but say there is a technical validation of the IDN, of the proposed IDN CCTLD string itself, because there is no such thing as the ISO 3166 list. There is another alternative mechanism for the selection of the string. So that's the first step in the process. As soon as this has been completed, and this is notified to the community by the publication of the requested string on the ICANN website, then the second process will start, which is an ordinary delegation request. And this can take as long as it takes. I know, YJ, you've done some research on delegations and redelegations. A delegation needs to go through certain steps with IANA, and that is the second phase. Only after conclusion of the delegation request, then there will be a board decision on the delegation and therefore on the IDN CCTLD strand. So although the window will open, the door will be open, hopefully at the 16th, that is assuming the board will adopt the IDN implementation plan, it doesn't mean that on the 16th there will be a board resolution on IDN CCTLD string. It will have to go through two steps. Now, with regard to the non-contentiousness of a string, specifically the first step of that process is about the non-contentiousness of that string. One of the steps that, and this is more or less similar to the delegation, if a string, IDN CCTLD string, is submitted, it needs to be supported by the relevant public authorities of the country or territory. There needs to be support by the local internet community for that string. So that is a bit similar as a delegation request. The IDN or the operator needs to be supported by the local internet community and by the government as well. So, and it's only if it this support is documented that it is considered non-contentious. So how many it will be, we don't know. I hope with regard to the first two questions, I've answered your questions. With regard to the financial contributions, I was a bit confused. Could you repeat that question, please?
Yes. I think I asked two different questions about the CCTL, the IDEA CCTL, this kind of the agreement framework, which you mentioned that could be agreement or exchange of letters. And that reminds me of the current CCTLD framework.
Yeah.
And then the other question is the financial contribution arrangement.
Okay, sorry. Yeah,
also
I forgot this.
Yes.
With regard to going back to the arrangement between IDEA and CCTLD manager and ICANN, the first step that you, and this is all in the implementation plan, by the way, the first is that there will be, is quote-unquote general terms and conditions for to apply. This has to be signed by the requester. The IDN or the requester can indicate whether they want to enter into a documentation of responsibility and or a exchange of letters based on that documentation of responsibilities. And you're right, say that mechanism looks very familiar if you're familiar with the accountability framework program, and that shouldn't come as a surprise, but we've maintained the documentation of responsibility because it includes some different terms than the accountability framework. And you may know that the first step in the development of the accountability framework program was developing, designing the accountability framework as it is now, and based on that, there was this model of exchange of letters, and we've done the same, or it is proposed in the implementation plan to use a same or similar mechanism. So you've got the documentation of responsibility and exchange of letters. So that is it's structured the similar way. They look familiar, but the documentation of responsibility and the associated exchange of letters is more extensive than the accountability framework and its associated exchange of letters. With regard to the, financial contributions of CCTLDs, I haven't put that on the agenda this time. There is a discussion going on within the CCTLD community and ICANN on the, as a first step, on the what is called the AEJ, so that's the Expense Area Groupings Report. And during this SOL meeting, there will be an update on the specifically for the CCTLDs on the EAG. And within the CCTLD community, it has not been discussed yet how to move that process forward, nor within the strategic and operational planning working group. So whatever I would say about it would be speculation.
Thank you for your clarification.
This is Liz. Bart, thank you so much. Thank you so much to all of you for participating today. I do want to invite you to submit questions to the policy staff email address that we provided if you have further questions. We also have another presentation of this content later on today. So if you joined late or missed some things, feel free to join back in or encourage others to RSVP and join. We thank you very much for your suggestions as well, and we'll be following up on them. And look forward to meeting as many of you who are able to come to Seoul there as possible. So thank you to all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this
Bye-bye.
Concludes our session.
Thank you.
Thank you.